Time for Message in the Bottle, brought to you by Bangor Wine and Cheese Company, 86 Hammond Street in downtown Bangor. Eric Meehan with us in studio. I asked you earlier today which character, and you said...
Molly Sheedy.
Which is good, because I was probably Molly Ringwald.
I had a thing for Molly Ringwald.
I had a thing for Ally Sheedy.
Oh, there you go. Well, this is awkward. Or not. It's a good thing there's a very lush red wine between us now. What could go wrong? My band covers that song. And
may I stop you for a moment and say I got to see 161,
right. And we didn't
last
cover
week. But you guys were great.
Thank you. Yeah, three quarters of 161, and again, you do the math. I don't feel like it, but it went pretty well. We had only one strange person rush the stage.
I couldn't help myself.
I know. Besides you, that was pretty fun. It was cool. We don't get to rock acoustically a lot, and as my wife pointed out the last time she heard us, which was probably 4 or 5 years ago at this point, it's really cool to actually like hear some of the guitar and bass interplay that just kind of gets lost in the magnificent roar of our normal gigs. But it was pretty fun. I got to my son got to hang out with the son of the sound guy, and they were just hanging out. My kids don't get to see us live much because we usually go on well past my bedtime, much less theirs. And so it was a quality.
Eric Charles, I appear to be getting some nice video
That's right. Yeah. By the way, we have my son with me here live in studio. He's not really, he is alive, but he's not on a mic. So you won't hear him unless he starts to prattle away in the background, which has been known to happen. He was a victim of one of these amazing summer fevers that you definitely want to get on the hottest days of the year. So he's fine now, but we had to keep him home. So why don't you forget about me? I mean, besides the fact that it's a tremendous song from a rather unremarkable band, unless you're a fan of Simple Minds, and you may be. I just, they didn't strike me when I was younger. I'm from New Jersey, though. It was like Bruce Springsteen, Bon Jovi, and Bust. So don't you forget about me, because we've been talking about Spain, right, in the Iberian Peninsula. And next week, because fortunately we still have a little time left in July, even though it seems fleeting. But today we get to talk still about just entirely about Spain and about all the other things that we haven't really talked about, because Spain is definitely famous for cava, their sparkling wine. We talked last week about the Tempranillo belt and the Frenchianization of Spain. And today we're going to kind of talk about all the other forgotten and not forgotten things. And we're going to settle a debate today. We're going to settle a debate, which is fun. It's not a debate between Rich and I or Carrie and I, but it's a debate that rages between the French and the Spanish, which is far more exciting than anything that could exist here in studio. The one thing I want to talk about before we kind of launch into the other grapes to not forget about and regions to not forget about is this notion that the dictator Franco shut down this entire peninsula really on a extraordinarily systematic level for about 50 years, and it ended in 1975 with his death. So the importation, the friendships, the opportunities to bring the best of Europe to America were significantly changed after the fortunes of many who wanted to kind of gut into this area and really exploit it, frankly, for their own purposes. It was stunted. And that's going to be a theme not only of today, but also when we talk about Portugal next week. It's an incredibly important part of the story. So just bear these things in mind when you're like, wow, I've never heard of that. I've never heard of that. I've never heard of that. That's right. You haven't, even though you've heard about, all the international grapes. We call them international grapes. They're really French grapes. But they're called international grapes because France was open. And why was France open to the U.S.? We helped them to a significant degree in the 1940s. Perhaps you heard about that.
It was in all the papers.
It was in all the papers. That's correct. So we were there. We had experienced not only those places, but those names, those wines, and we had forged relationships. And because the French had relationships with Germans, we had relationships with Germans almost immediately, and Italians likewise. Spain, not so much. So let's talk about some of these regions. Now, last week we talked about how the Tempranillo belt kind of came in and the Frenchianization came about because a lot of these folks escaping the phylloxera blight came down through the Basque region of France and Spain into the area around the city of San Sebastian, which is a marvelous tourist destination if you like things like octopus and shellfish and fresh fish and wonderful acidic whites and acidic reds. Man, that's your place. It's tremendous. So they came down through there, and that is the region of the famous wine Chocoli. And that is a wine, if you like to find out where your enamel is missing on your teeth, you find yourself some Chocoli. And we do stock one. It's very, very nice. There are some that are kind of rounded off, but the real stuff, man, it's absolutely designed to go with the coastal food, the heat, even the red varieties and rosé varieties of Chocoli are zesty, and they're just fantastic. But they're a little bit, 201 level. So, if you like, your very zesty, Sauvignon Blancs, things like that, maybe try out a Chocoli. Then from there, we talk about the red wine regions of, Bierzo, Ribera Sacra. These are just, so if you're looking at Spain, and of course, Portugal is a majority of the West Coast. You go north of that and you go into a region called Galicia and Rías Baixas. And in Galicia, the Mencia grape is really where you start to see that take shape. And Mencia is like this really interesting grape because it's kind of Pinot Noir-like in the overt fruit characteristics. But it has a very sort of a thicker skin and almost a slightly funkier vibe. And we have a couple expressions of it in the store right now, and it's really, really interesting. So again, this is the Mencia grape, M-E-N-C-I-A, and it's just, it's really, really interesting, especially at this time of year, because it goes great. It kind of has like this spicy aspect to it, right? So stuff off the grill is especially sort of, it sings with that. Then going down to just south of there where I mentioned Rías Baixas, cut off from modernization really because of the Franco thing, and it only emerged as a vibrant white wine scene in the 1990s. Pardon me one moment. The main white grape from here is a grape called Albariño, and we've talked about Albariño from both sides of the Portuguese-Spanish coast, or the river that divides them. Kind of very honeyed. The region that this is grown in resembles nothing so much as the fjords of Denmark. Really long appendages of land that reach into the sea, and then the vineyards are kind of at the extreme inland, sort of like if you're imagining fingers, they're kind of in the webbing, right? And this fog descends and then goes away, and so it really creates this wonderful level of warmth when you need it and cooling when you need it, and makes this really sort of like an unctuous fruit quality and honeyed quality to Albariños. That's just tremendous. And there's lighter versions of this. There's darker and heavier versions of it. But basically, it has the same tone, just depending on how loud you turn the volume, I guess. Yeah. Other things. There's a lot of red grapes that we didn't talk about that aren't Tempranillo. And we're going to drink one today. And this is this, as I teased, this notion of the debate we're going to settle today. The French and the Spanish both claim the grape Grenache or Garnacha. And so what I brought today for us to enjoy on air, and we have this, and I believe, if memory serves, and it may not because it's foggy these days, we might have traded the rosé version of this.
Good. And I have a bottle at home that I'm fantastic. Saving for a special summer night.
Nice. So what we're drinking today is the Breca Red, the Breca Garnacha. We tried the Breca Rosé of Garnacha a couple weeks back. This is a project that was started by Jorge Ordóñez to work with what is considered to be one of, if not the original clones of the Garnacha grape, right? This is called Garnacha de Aragon, Aragona. And it is, I mean, it's everything you expect from a Grenache, right? I mean, it's like, it's rich. Mm. It's got a tremendous amount of dark toned fruit, raspberry. It's lush and deep and rich, which also has to do, as I say, with Jorge Ordóñez, who likes that type of wine. But it's really got some interesting characteristics. There's a sort of a smoky woodiness to it. A little bit of like dark currant. It's kind of next level, really interesting Grenache, Garnacha, if you will. I'm sorry. I was trained by a Burgundian. It's really hard for me. It's like, you know, but it's tremendously interesting. And so this is, again, Breca Grenache Garnacha da Aragon. And, I recommend trying that because Grenache, again, so the Grenache, as Tempranillo has a belt in Spain, Grenache kind of already also has a belt in Spain, and it goes basically from, again, if you're looking at Spain, two-thirds of the way up, Madrid, they don't really have it, but if you look just above Madrid to, like, slightly the east, you find the regions of Calatayud, Carreña. This is where you start to see Grenache in a more valued form, and then as it goes up and it climbs up, and indeed through the region of Catalonia and into France, where they claim it's from originally too. But apparently they're wrong. So there you go. The French are wrong. You heard it here first. But that's the Grenache belt, the Garnacha belt. It stretches essentially from Provence and the Rhone Valley and then kind of drops down, runs all the way down along the Mediterranean into Spain and then kind of towards Madrid, but never gets quite that far. The other red, and I know I'm running out of time, that I want to mention for Americans especially is Monastrell, also known in France as Mourvèdre, and in California as Matero, though you really don't see it called that much. This Monastrell is grown further down southeast in Jumilla and Yecla and places like this. Really tremendously chocolatey, berry-like wine that Americans, it's like if you like American cab, but you don't want any like rough shoulders around it or whatever. You just want something to kind of slip into. Monastrell's your babe. It's amazingly good. I have one called Hecula right now, which is it's a value wine. It's tremendously good, and you can go grab it right now and be delighted. I am running out of time, so I will mention other important grapes like Bobal, Trepa, and Mazuelo, which we know as Carignan. We'll talk about that probably some other time. We do have a tasting in August. I'm sorry to bring that up, but it will be the 15th, and it will be exciting and wonderful, despite the fact that it's in August. Yeah. I know. I'm sorry. But hey, good to talk to you all, and I'll catch you all here next week to talk about Portugal. Cheers.
Looking forward to it. Thank you, Eric.